catch our podcast conversations for the curious, essential knowledge. Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today, we're tackling something really fundamental. The lines on the map that shape our world. Political borders. And we're digging into this using a key work. It's called Borders by two really prominent political geographers, Alexander C. Diener and Joshua Hagen. You know, the thing that hits you straight away is this huge contradiction in the 21st century. I mean, we've got global finance zipping around, instant messages across continents, stuff shipped everywhere. You'd think the world would be, I don't know, flattening out, becoming more borderless.
Yeah, that was definitely the vibe for a while, wasn't it? Especially after the Berlin Wall came down, this idea of a borderless world. But like you said, look around. We're actually seeing, well, more walls, more fences, incredibly high-tech surveillance at borders. And just listen to the politics. It's all about who belongs inside and who stays outside. So this book asks that big question. Why do these lines seem to matter more now, not less?
Okay.
And the authors, Diener and Hagen, they really challenge that simple, optimistic view. So our mission today really is to give you the tools from their work to understand borders not as just static lines, you know, but as these really dynamic, powerful forces, political, social, cultural forces shaping everything.
Right. Not just lines, but processes. Okay, so let's talk about the authors themselves, Alexander Diener and Joshua Hagen. What's their background? Why are they the ones to guide us here?
Well, they're both distinguished political geographers, and their specific areas of expertise just fit together perfectly for this topic. He's quite neat, actually. Diener, his work is really focused on the human side of it, contemporary experiences, especially what happens when borders shift suddenly. He spent a lot of time looking at the post-Soviet world, like Central Asia, places where lines that used to be just internal admin boundaries suddenly became hard international borders overnight.
Wow, yeah.
So he looks at, you know, the real human impact, migration, identity politics, families separated, all that messy stuff. Okay, so Diener's focused on these kind of abrupt, almost artificial border creations and their fallout.
Mm-hmm.
But Hagen, his background's different, right? More historical. Europe.
Exactly. Hagen brings the deep historical context, particularly from Europe, where, let's face it, the whole idea of the modern nation-state border was really hammered out over centuries. He focuses on state power, national identity, how physical space and boundary making are used to, well, legitimize authority.
So how do they mesh those two perspectives, the sudden imposed border versus the long-established European one?
Well, that's kind of the magic of the book, I think. That tension is what makes it so powerful. Diener gives you the ground-level, sometimes chaotic, human reality of borders today. Hagen gives you the historical sweep, the theories of statecraft, where this whole system came from. So they can zoom out to the big picture, the historical forces, and then zoom right back in to what it actually feels like for people living in a borderland community. It's that combination.
Got it. Okay, so let's get into the book's main argument then. You said it's about seeing borders not as fixed lines, but as processes.
Precisely. If you only think of borders as these ancient, unchanging things on a map, you're missing the point. The book really hammers home that the kind of precise, legally defined, thin line border we use now, that's actually pretty new, historically speaking.
Right, so what was it like before?
Well, think less line, more zone. Historically, boundaries were often these vague areas, frontiers. Think of the edges of the Roman Empire, maybe. Power just kind of faded out. It wasn't a sharp cutoff defined by treaties and border posts everywhere.
Okay, so the core idea, the central thesis, is that a border isn't a static thing. It's an active process.
Yes. And to really understand that process, they give us this fantastic framework. It's kind of the intellectual engine of the book, they call it. Bordering, ordering, and othering.
Bordering, ordering, othering. Okay, say more about that.
It's a way to break down what borders actually do. It helps us see them as active agents, you know, shaping things.
Right, shaping economies, security, maybe even how we think about ourselves.
Absolutely. And it helps explain that paradox we started with. The book argues that technology and globalization aren't making borders disappear. They're transforming them, making them in some ways easier to cross for things like money or data.
Okay.
But much, much harder for other things, like, say, migrants without the right paperwork. So simultaneously more porous and more fortified.
That makes sense. Let's dig into that historical shift first. From the fuzzy frontier to the sharp line. Where did that happen?
The book really points to Europe, and specifically the Treaty of Westphalia in 1648, as a key turning point.
Westphalia. Okay, I remember that from history class, but refresh my memory.
Well, before Westphalia, authority was often a bit messy. You had overlapping claims from feudal lords, the church, emperors. Territory wasn't always super clearly defined or exclusive. Westphalia helped cement the idea of state sovereignty, the principle that a state, a ruler, has supreme and exclusive authority within its specific territory.
Ah, right. Exclusive authority. And if you want exclusive authority,
you need to know exactly where your authority ends and someone else's begins. You need clear lines.
So the need for clear boundaries came directly out of this new idea of the sovereign state.
Pretty much. It created the demand for these sharp, linear borders to mark out where one set of laws, one ruler's power, stopped. It's a legal and administrative invention tied to the state itself.
And then this European model, they took it on the road, basically, during colonialism.
Exactly. European powers exported this linear border concept across the globe. Think about the map of Africa or the Middle East. Those straight lines cutting across landscapes, often drawn by colonial administrators, sometimes literally with a ruler on a map in London or Paris.
Yeah, often completely ignoring who actually lived there, the existing cultures, ethnic groups.
Right. The book really highlights how this artificial imposition of borders, ignoring the human geography on the ground, planted the seeds for so many conflicts that we're still dealing with today, and borders creating problems, not just solving them.
Okay, that context is crucial. Now let's apply that framework you mentioned. Bordering, ordering, othering. Starting with bordering, that sounds like the most physical part.
It is. Bordering is the actual material act of creating and enforcing the boundary. It's the state showing its power in a very visible way. So yeah, this is where you get the walls, the fences, like the U.S.-Mexico border or Israel's West Bank barrier. It's also checkpoints, land surveys, guards, technology used for surveillance right at the line. It's the physical stuff.
The wall you can see and touch.
Okay.
But borders aren't just physical walls, are they? What about all the rules, the policies, the invisible lines?
That's ordering. This is the regulatory job of the border. Thinking of the border as a kind of selective filter designed to manage flows, people, goods, money, information, according to what the state wants.
Filter. Okay.
Yeah.
So like customs, visa rules.
Exactly. Customs inspections, deciding who needs a visa and who doesn't, trade tariffs, immigration quotas. That's all ordering. And the key word here is selective. Borders are designed to let certain things through easily, maybe tourists with money, capital investment, high-skilled workers.
The desirables.
Right. And they're designed to block or tightly control the undesirables, perhaps undocumented migrants, certain goods, maybe even political ideas or data flows the state doesn't like. Think about data localization laws, for example. That's ordering digital information.
Wow. So the border isn't just stopping things. It's actively managing global movement, often based on economic value or perceived threat. It sounds like a tool for managing inequality, in a way.
That's a big part of it.
Yep.
And that leads us to the third piece, othering. This one is, well, it's powerful and maybe a bit more subtle. Othering is the sociocultural process. It's how borders are used to build a sense of national identity.
How does that work?
By drawing a line, you create an inside and an outside, an us and a them. Borders help forge that feeling of us, the nation, often by contrasting it with them, the foreigners, the outsiders.
Ah, so it connects directly to nationalism and identity politics.
Deeply. It's tied up with sovereignty, who belongs, who has rights. And you see it constantly in political rhetoric, right? Portraying people on the other side of the border as different, maybe even as a threat. It solidifies the use by defining the other. It makes the division feel natural.
That's a really sharp way to put it. Bordering, ordering, othering. Okay, let's circle back to that idea of the borderless world myth. You said borders aren't vanishing, they're transforming and relocating. How does that work?
Well, think about smart borders. Control isn't always happening right at the physical line anymore. It's increasingly data-driven. It's remote,
right?
Like biometric passports, airlines having to share passenger data before flights even take off, complex algorithms analyzing traveler information to flag risks.
So the border checks are happening way before you even get near the actual border.
Yeah, sometimes, yes. The border becomes less a place and more a network, a global system of surveillance and sorting.
And you mentioned the EU's Schengen area as an example.
It's a perfect, if paradoxical, example. Inside Schengen, they removed most border checks between member countries. Looks like debordering, right? Openness.
Yeah, free movement.
But that internal openness was only possible because they massively strengthened the external border of the entire Schengen zone, creating what people sometimes call Fortress Europe.
Mm-hmm. So the border didn't disappear. It just moved outwards. It got concentrated and intensified at the edges. Often they even outsourced border control to neighboring countries.
So openness for some inside the club relies on building much higher walls for everyone else trying to get in.
That's often how it works. It shows how de-bordering in one place can actually lead to intensified bordering somewhere else.
Okay, stepping back a bit. If we pull all this together, what are the really big, crucial takeaways from Diener and Hawkins' work that we should hold on to? I think there are three main themes that really stand out. First, the idea that borders are social constructions.
Meaning
they're not natural features of the earth, like rivers or mountains. They are human inventions, created at certain times for certain political reasons. They feel permanent, but they're not inevitable.
Right. That makes you question the maps we see, doesn't it? They look so fixed.
Exactly. It encourages you to think critically about why that line is there. Second big theme. Borders function primarily as filters, not absolute barriers. We talked about this with ordering. They are designed to be selectively permeable.
Letting some things through, blocking others.
Facilitating capital, information, maybe skilled labor, while restricting the movement of the poor, the displaced, those deemed unskilled. This selective filtering is key to understanding global inequality and mobility.
Okay. And the third theme.
That borderlands themselves, the zones right along the border, are sites of power and resistance. While the state tries to impose a clear line, a clear separation, these areas are often incredibly dynamic. Think of twin cities like El Paso and Juarez. There are zones of intense cultural mixing, economic interdependence, hybrid identities. People live their lives across the border, challenging the simple us versus them narrative the state often promotes. There's agency there, resistance to the line.
That's a great point. It's not just about the state imposing the border. It's also about how people live with it and sometimes push back against it. You know, the book itself, besides the framework, has some really punchy ways of putting these ideas, some core statements that really stick with you.
Yeah, they summarize things very effectively.
Like this one on the globalization paradox. In our age of accelerating globalization, borders have not become irrelevant. Instead, they have become sites of intense contradiction, simultaneously torn down for capital and fortified against people, making them more complex and more significant than ever before.
That just nails it, doesn't it? The complexity, not simpler, more complex.
Totally. And then there's the definition of their core concept. A border is better understood not as a line on a map, but as a dynamic and continuous social process. It is the product of bordering, the act of creation, ordering, the act of regulation, and othering, the act of identity formation.
That's the lens right there, seeing it as those three actions happening constantly.
And finally, linking it all back to the state and identity. The modern border and the modern nation state are inseparable. They create each other. This relationship is cemented through the process of othering, which uses the border to forge a national us against a foreign them.
Powerful stuff. It shows how deeply embedded borders are, not just in geography, but in our very ideas of nationhood and belonging. So, okay. We have this great analytical toolkit now. How do we actually use it? How does this help us understand what's going on in the world?
Well, I think one immediate application is just deconstructing the news differently.
Right.
You see a story about, say, a trade dispute or tensions over migrants at a border or a new security fence going up. Now you can ask specific questions using that triad.
Okay.
Okay, what flows is this border policy trying to order? Or what kind of othering is happening in the political speeches around this? Who is being cast as them to justify this?
Yeah, that's practical. It helps you see beyond the surface headlines. And it really helps understand populist rhetoric too, doesn't it? When you hear politicians calling to build the wall, the book helps you recognize that it's not just about the physical structure. It's often a performance of othering.
A performance?
Yeah, a symbolic act designed to rally people around a shared identity by pointing to an external threat. The political messaging, the creation of us versus them, can be as important or even more important than the actual wall itself.
That makes a lot of sense. And for listeners, just thinking about their own experiences, like traveling.
Oh, definitely. Think about airports. Next time you travel internationally, notice the architecture of control, the different lines for citizens versus non-citizens, the questions asked by border officials. Those aren't just bureaucratic hurdles. They are, as the book suggests, little rituals of state power. They're actively ordering people into categories, deciding who moves easily and who gets scrutinized. Your passport check is part of this massive global system of bordering, ordering, and othering.
It really changes how you see something as mundane as going through immigration.
Yeah.
So wrapping up, What really struck you most from revisiting this? What's the big takeaway for you?
For me, it's probably that point about borders being social constructions, realizing how recent the sharp linear border actually is, historically speaking, and how many of the lines on today's map were drawn, frankly, quite arbitrarily, especially during colonial times. It just shatters that feeling that the current world map is somehow natural or permanent. It feels much more contingent.
Yeah, contingent. That's a good word for it. And for me, I think the enduring takeaway is just how pervasive borders are. They're not just out there at the edge of the country. They're embedded in our laws, in our passports, in the databases that track us, even in how we think about us and them. The physical wall or fence is almost just the tip of the iceberg. The real bordering, ordering, and othering happens in all these other systems, too.
Mm-hmm. Which means, I guess, the final thought is, we can't just wish borders away or pretend we live in a borderless world. That doesn't match reality. Instead, we really need to grapple with their complexity. Understanding them as these active processes, bordering, ordering, othering, is absolutely essential if we want to understand the big challenges of the 21st century, from migration to trade to identity politics. It's the key, really.
A really crucial lens for navigating our very connected yet still very divided world. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by ACATRA Foundation.